There it is.
Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. The Atlantic, in a recent article headlined "The End of Reading," reported that Americans, once members of a proudly literate society, read much less than they used to. But I'm guessing that's not you. Today we're going to celebrate reading by compiling a UPR community book list. You can help by letting us know what books you recommend. We'll be joined by avid reader and UPR friend Elaine Thatcher. We'll hear from booksellers about the latest books being published as well. You can email us your book list right now. Hope you will. Love to see what you're reading and give me an idea of what I should read next. Email that to upraccess@gmail.com. upraccess@gmail.com. And Lane Thatcher is here. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, nice to be here.
And we have Ann Hellman from the King's English Bookshop in Salt Lake City as well via Zoom. And thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, let's just jump right in. What are the latest books got you and your readers excited?
Let's do some fiction to start off with. I've been talking to everybody about Ann Patchett's new book, Whistler. Especially right now, it's just a book where what happens is the main character in the book, she reunites with her stepfather, who she hasn't seen in 50 years, runs into him at the museum, and they're so happy to see each other, and they take such delight in each other's company that they make a pact that they're not going to let another day go by without seeing each other and enjoying each other, and he meets her husband, and it's interesting to read a book where a father and a daughter have just this pure form of father-daughter love. And there's drama and things in the book, but just that relationship it's so heartwarming and so fun to read a book right now that's happy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. Yeah. I could use that. I'm writing that down. What's the name of the title?
It's called Whistler.
Whistler.
Whistler's actually the name of a horse, and it's a story that her stepfather tells her when she's younger, and that's kind of what is the backbone of the story. But oh my gosh, it's just so good.
Yeah, and Patchett, of course, wonderful. And she's a bookseller as well.
She is. She owns Parnassus Books in Tennessee, and I think she works there when she's not home writing too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, she's a wonderful advocate for bookselling and reading.
Well, I'm glad to hear there's a new Ann Patchett. Yeah.
The next one I wanted to talk about is called Man Overboard. It's by Kathleen Rooney. This is a kind of a funny philosophical short novel about a guy who's on a cruise ship off the coast of Texas, and he's a little tipsy, and he falls overboard, but it's really late at night, and so he knows nobody's coming to get him because they all think he's in bed. And he's a former swimmer in college, so he can swim a little bit. And he's in the water, and over the course of the book, it goes hour by hour, he contemplates his life and what's brought him to this point. And what is he going to do if he gets rescued? And that's the big if, right? And as he's swimming and treading water, different animals shimmy up to him and offer advice or thoughts. An octopus, a starfish, and it's alternates between funny and dear. I won't tell you how it ends, but it's just so interesting, and I kept thinking, well, first of all, I would never want to be in that position, but second of all, what would I be contemplating? The mistakes I'd made in my life, the people I'd been kind to, the people I hadn't been kind to.
What an interesting premise.
Yeah, so that's Man Overboard. He sobers up pretty quickly.
Wonderful. Man Overboard by Kathleen Rooney, you said.
And then I want to talk about two, you know, for me, Louise Penny and Craig Johnson are automatic reads. I love them unapologetically. And Louise Penny's new book is coming in the fall. It's called Miss Wolcott's Ghost. And she's going back to her style of just, you know, a local mystery needs to be solved. There's no world ending water shortages or United States taking over Canada or anything like that. It's just a straightforward mystery.
And is Wolcott's Ghost, huh? Is Inspector Gamache in this one?
Oh, he is.
Okay.
He is. And we are in Three Pines for almost the whole time.
Okay.
With all of his wonderful characters. And Miss Wolcott's Ghost is a flower named after Miss Wolcott, and it all happened way back in the early 30s, and there was a terrible cruise ship. It was a terrible story about a cruise ship that sank, and what comes from that? Dead bodies, suspicions, all of the great things that Louise Penny does. I think her fans will really, really love it. And then Craig Johnson's new book is The Brothers McKay, and it's sort of loosely a retelling of The Brothers Karamazov in the only the way that Craig can do it. It's funny, it's crazy, and he keeps you guessing until the last minute. And one of the things I love about Craig Johnson is he takes you up to that area in Wyoming, and everything is out in the open. You're in the mountains, you're in the snow, you're in the valleys, it's on fire. So you really get a feel for what it's like to be there. And at the same time, it's a mystery that always has a satisfying ending. So, and if you haven't read The Brothers Karamazov, because I haven't, I don't think it matters.
Right. This would be much shorter. And
set a lot closer.
Yeah. Well, Craig Johnson. Yeah, I was thrilled to see he had a new book. New book every year, of course, right?
And that's fascinating though, because I had a Russian period when I was in high school. I was totally probably because of Dr. Zhivago. And I read Brothers Karamazov, and I read a bunch of different authors, and the Russian Constitution and all those things back then. It's been a long time, but I would love to read a retelling of that.
Yeah. Well, and I'll be having Craig Johnson on this program. I do every year. He's one of my favorite people to interview. He's funny. He's
very funny.
And a big personality. He's great.
Yeah, he is. And I don't know if I talked about Ali Condie's new book recently, but her new mystery, this is her sophomore mystery, is called The Girls' Trip. And it's a group of three women who, during the pandemic, join an online book club. And it's a lot of people who don't know each other. And they kind of form a lovely friendship. And they continue after the pandemic ends and get to be really good friends. And it's not long before two of the women realize that the other woman is a very, very famous movie star. And by then, they're all good friends and it doesn't matter. They decide to take a trip to this place in Southern Utah that the movie star wants to go. And it's definitely Zion National Park, but she changes all the names. But for those of us who are from here, they get into Zion National Park, and of course they get into the Narrows, and then there's a flood, and there's a bad character in there somewhere. And it's all about how they escape and how they don't escape and who's doing what. And there's all kinds of mix-ups. Ali is a terrific mystery writer. I've loved everything she's ever written for young people, but The Girls' Trip is a lot of fun, especially if you live in Utah.
What's the author's name again, Ali?
Ali Condie.
She's a local author, right?
Yeah, she's Utah. In fact, she's a professor at BYU.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
She's
busy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I have one nonfiction book that I wanted to mention. It's called 200. This is in honor of the semi-quincentennial. Am I saying that right?
I believe so.
250 Great American Things. And they're short essays about great American things. And they're literally like just a paragraph. And it's fun to go through it and see, okay, well, drag racing, drive-in movie theaters, Frisbees. I mean, I know in these days we're all a little fractured over getting along or not getting along, but I think we can all agree that a grilled cheese sandwich is a pretty good thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I agree, anyway. Yeah.
So this is called, in the rodeo, roller coasters, this is called 250 Great American Things, and the editors are County Highway, which is a group of people up in Montana that have kind of brought back a printed newspaper. I don't know if you've ever talked to them, Tom, but they'd be an interesting interview.
Oh, County Highway is the name?
Yeah. Did you ever interview Walter Kern?
No, I haven't.
He's one of the people doing this, and they publish a newspaper that's serious. It's a serious newspaper with want ads and everything, and then essays. And they've started a little publishing company, and this is one of the first books they did. Anyway,
so is County Highway the name of their newspaper? Is County Highway the name of their newspaper?
Newspaper is called County Highway.
Okay.
I'm seeing them. They have a magazine as well. Countyhighway.com is what I'm reading.
Yeah, it's not. It's not a magazine. It's an actual newspaper.
Oh, a newspaper. Okay.
We carry it at the bookstore. I don't know what other bookstores in Utah carry it, but it's all over the country.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's really. It's interesting stuff.
Yeah. Thank you for turning me on to that. I'll reach out to those guys. That's nice.
We were commenting before the show started that, I mean, I'm spending a lot of time reading articles elsewhere. You know, I read at The Atlantic and I read the New York Times and I read sometimes the New Yorker, but I let my subscription lapse. And this sounds like it would be a great addition.
Yeah. It's one of those books you can keep by your bed and read a couple of pages. And I just wanted to mention one more because the State Fair, which is coming up soon, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's more American than that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect.
For sure. 250 Great American Things, edited by County Highway.
Right? Yeah.
Any children's books or I don't know if anything's coming out.
Oh my gosh, this fall, there's so many good children's books. So my favorite is called Today We'll Be Eaten. It's a picture book and it's about a ladybug and a dragonfly. They're flying along and all of a sudden the wind whips them over and they fall into the pond and they're both on their backs. And so they turn to each other and say, well, we're probably going to get eaten. And so they're laying there on their backs, kind of contemplating their last moments. And then it shows the animals. So first there's a fish and a frog that come up and they're looking at them and they're thinking to themselves, well, maybe we should eat them, but what are they looking at? And so the next thing you know, you've got all the animals in the pond looking up at the sky because the ladybug and the dragonfly are looking up at the sky and they kind of all become friends. They're floating downstream as this is all happening and they end up on dry land at the end. It's a darling, darling story about how you could be friends in the least expected places.
I love that.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
So that's The Day We'll Be Eaten.
Who's the author on that one?
Alan Barillero. I'm sorry, I'm not saying that right.
Okay.
And I don't know him, but I just love that book. And then Sophie Blackall, she just keeps writing the best books. I think this is going to be another Caldecott. Story Rug is the story of three classrooms as the picture book opens, and two of the classrooms are doing whatever, but the third classroom is very quiet, and you zoom in on it, and you realize that they're braiding. They're braiding each other's hair, they're braiding their shoelaces, they're braiding whatever they can find, and one of the little boys doesn't have anything to braid. So he goes home, and his mom tears up a shirt, and he starts to braid it. The next thing you know, all of the kids are braiding and they're bringing in material from their lives, which is part of the sweetness of the story. And they start to braid together this story rug. And so it's made out of their lives, really. And they're learning how to braid and they're learning how to sew. And at the end of the book, they've got the whole school braiding and they've got this magnificent story rug, which is, you know, what you want in your classroom. And they dedicate it to their teacher. And it's just sweet. It's a really good back to school book, especially for the little ones that are going back or going for the first time. So Sophie Blackall, she's just a master of, you know, getting at what kids think about and need.
That's wonderful.
Sophie Blackall, what was the name of the book again?
Sophie Blackall, and it's called Story Rug.
Blackall.
She's won two Caldecotts. She won one for The Lighthouse. And I think she won one for When You Come to Earth. She's just really, really talented.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful.
And the funniest book this season is called Whale. That was unexpected. And it's a woman named Maud who goes out fishing every day with her dog. And she's very droll, very dry sense of humor. And of course, as they set off on this expedition, which they do every day, but this time they get swallowed by a whale. And Maud says, well, that was unexpected. I guess we're going to die. So let's have a going away party. And so they proceed to stage this going away party. But every time the whale opens its mouth, somebody else is washed in. So then there's a goat and then there's a lobster and then there's this and then there's that. And the whole time Maud is commenting with her dry sense of humor on what's happening. And as will happen, of course, the whale at some point spits them all out. And she says, well, I hope that doesn't happen again soon. But it's, you know, I think kids really get that dry sense of humor.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
Yeah.
Casey Lyle's really, really funny.
What, Casey Lyle?
Casey Lyle. Yeah.
Lyle. That reminds me of the old song, the old, I knew an old lady who swallowed a fly.
Yeah. It's a lot like that. Yeah. A different telling of Jonah and the whale for sure. I'm also so happy to tell you that Shannon Hale and Dean Hale have a new Princess in Black just in time for Halloween. Kids just love these books. And this is Princess in Black and the Trick-or-Treating Trouble. And whenever there's trouble, that little princess just puts on her ninja outfit and wards off the monsters. Every kid who reads these books, just they can't get enough of them. They laugh and they're tickled, and it's just monster fighting at its best. So
that's wonderful. Really, really, yeah.
So what do you think, Anne, about these? We were just talking about the article in The Atlantic. Maybe, Tom, you can tell us a little bit more about it, because I'm wondering, do these books for children teach them complexity at all? Do they teach them? I mean, I know they're learning to read. What do you think in the way of teaching kids to have a longer attention span and to read increasingly complex things?
Right, right. I think kids are really smart, and they get a lot more than we give them credit for. And I think especially if you start when they're really young and they can't sit still for very long, mm-hmm. and you're reading those short books to them that are interesting and making books available all the time in your home, not just in their bedroom, but, you know, in your living room, put the cookbooks out where they can see them, magazines, they learn by doing, and they learn by watching us, and increasingly they love to sit still. I mean, I remember being really little and sitting still for a Bill Pete book for 20 or 25 minutes. I don't think we give them enough credit. I think they can do it. And especially like a book like Whale, That Was Unexpected, or Today We'll Be Eaten. Those have really deep messages for kids to think about. I think a good picture book is something like that, rather than a picture book that has a heavy message about things that we're thinking about as adults.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, I think kids figure stuff out, and they don't need us giving them a heavily laden message book about water shortages or
no, they don't
climate
need
change. I mean, that's all coming to them in other ways, but what they're, I think, charged with as young people is learning how to be empathetic and thoughtful. And that's what a good picture book does. And that's why they read them over and over again, because they want that message. They want to make sure they understand it. And then they want to read it back to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, certainly true. So, Anne, I want to ask you about your adult readers, the people that come into your store. This Atlantic article is called The End of Reading. It notes that... let's see, fewer than half of all adults reported having read a book of any kind in 2022. 38% have read a novel or short story. And it goes on to compare 1958. English translation of Dr. Zhivago was the best-selling novel of the year. And then The Atlantic gives one of the sentences, a complex sentence, typical of Boris Pasternak. And then last year, they say top-selling novel was Sunrise on the Reaping, the latest in the Hunger Games young adult series. And then they give a sentence there, which is more simple. And they said that's the way things are trending, at least to what people want. And then they say that we're reading emails and tweets and, you know, shorter things. Elaine's mentioned reading more, and I'm in this category, more magazine articles and such, although still reading books. I don't know what's the case with you and your readers, what the trend is.
Well, I don't feel like it's fair to compare Dr. Zhivago to Sunrise on the Reaping. That makes me wonder. I mean, I like The Atlantic, but it makes me wonder where their data came from.
Yeah, that might be a little extreme. Yes, it's true. Yeah.
Also, I would say that those books by Suzanne Collins are very complex. I mean, they're really intense books about kids killing kids, and they're aimed at that 12 to 14, 16 age. And it's, you know, when kids don't think they can never die, and this could really happen.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
Yeah, certainly true.
But it helps them process, you know, loyalty and love and violence and authoritarianism. I don't think there's anything wrong with anybody reading Sunrise on the Reaping, frankly. Mm-hmm. And what I noticed in our bookstore is these kids start at a young age and they're reading baby board books, and then they work their way around the room, and then they do read Hunger Games. But they move on to read adult books that, I mean, I've been there 25 years, and so I'm on my third generation of parents and kids, and they're readers. And some of the young people now, I mean, we are definitely selling more horror and more romance. I think that's more of a reaction to the pandemic and the way our government's working right now. But they're not reading less, they're reading more. And a lot of the science fiction and the horror that we sell is really deep and complicated, and a lot of things to think about. The romances maybe not so much, but just they're fun and they're escapism. And if somebody wants to escape into a book instead of an Instagram post, I'm here to help them.
Yeah, oh, yeah. For sure.
What so about, I don't know.
I take your point on about the complexity. What about this overall stat? Fewer people are reading novels and short stories. I guess the people that come to your store obviously are bucking that trend.
Are readers.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I might be living in a bubble. I do think we've been reporting that, though. You know, you see articles like that every year, and you always have. Everybody's not reading anymore. And, you know, yes, of course we have a problem. We're all on our screens too much. We're all on Instagram too much. And that's, I just don't think that the end is near.
Okay.
Good.
There's more and more.
It's very helpful.
Yes. Reading. Yeah. And it's our job to help them, right?
Right. What about audiobooks? Do you find people go into audiobooks more than
lots of audiobooks? Yeah.
Reading the print. Uh-huh.
I love audiobooks. And I do think it's reading. And I think a lot of people listen while they're gardening or doing dishes or just going for a walk. For me, I can read a lot more if I've got an audiobook going at the same time. And in fact, right now I'm listening to Shadow of the Wind, which is one that I just never read back in the day. It's really a long audiobook. And I'm loving it. It takes place in Barcelona. And there's a lot of, it's all kind of Spanish accents, which is beautiful. And it's really, there's a lot of geography. I don't know if you remember that book, but you're really in that city and walking around a lot. So I love it. So I'm, you know, it gives me the opportunity to read another book while I'm reading other things at the same time. And I think a lot of people say, oh, that's not reading, but I disagree.
I do the same thing. Yeah, I do the same thing. And I think that with the audiobooks, you get an additional sensory interaction. You know, I listened to the audio version of Born a Crime by Trevor Noah.
Oh,
incredible. Yeah. That was incredible because he narrated it himself. He speaks several languages. He had the accents. He, you know, it was all really, it was an amazing book to listen to.
Yeah.
My more recent one was The Correspondent. That's, I listened to that rather than read it. And it was, it was just a wonderful, I loved it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but and I'm finding too, my eyesight is not what it once was, and listening is sometimes easier than reading these days.
Yeah, especially when it's nonfiction like that, and it's read by the person who wrote the story. I listened to the one by Prince Harry, number
Spare.
Two, Spare. Yeah, and it was terrific. I mean, it was Prince Harry telling us, you know, his side of things. I loved it. So, yeah, definitely.
One more thing, Anne. You mentioned families. I think that's a big part of how reading gets promoted is, you know, parents teach their children to read and love of reading, and then that gets passed down to the grandchildren.
Yeah. And if it's okay, I'd love to put in a plug for our not-for-profit, which is Brain Food Books. This week we got a really generous grant and are down in southeastern Utah today and tomorrow. We're in Blanding and Monument Valley and Montezuma Creek helping Utah Food Bank, and we're putting books into those pantries. And the whole idea is exactly that. So those families can come into the pantries, pick up whatever food they want to get, but they also have access to free books now because
that's wonderful.
The science shows you've got to have books in your home, and they have to be books that you own so that you have that sense of I'm important and I'm worthy.
What's the name of your nonprofit?
It's Brain Food Books.
What was it?
And it's, I think that if you go to Brain Food.
Oh, Brain Books, Food. Uh-huh.
Yeah, like books are brain food.
Uh-huh.
If you go to brainfoodbooks.org, you can see some of the work that we're doing, and it's so important. We've given away over 85,000 books in the past 3 years.
I'm involved with a similar charity. It's called Books for Babies, and we place we place books in women's shelters, Head Start, you know, any place, you know, with the fire and police, you know, to help children. And it's a wonderful thing to be, they're thrilled. And we put them at the food bank as well. And the families are thrilled to get them.
It's just so important that they can go home and have them on their shelf and say, this is my book and I can look at it whenever I want.
Yeah.
Leads to a life of reading.
So tell me the website again for Brain Food Books.
It's brainfoodbooks.org.
.org. Wonderful.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Happy to plug that. Yeah, for sure.
Thanks.
Well, Anne, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Happy to do it. It's fun
great,
to talk about.
Great suggestions. Great to always talk about books. Yeah.
have a great day.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. And bye now. Anne Holman from Back and Beyond Books in Salt Lake City. King's English. Sorry. Sorry. I've got Moab on my mind. Anne appreciates you correcting me. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure she's approves of Back and Beyond Books in Moab. Anne Holman, the King's English bookshop in Salt Lake City. The King's English. Wonderful place. And I didn't know about Brain Food Books, so that's...
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And then you mentioned...
Books for Babies.
Books for Babies.
Yeah. It's, okay. I don't know much about it other than a group that I'm a part of supports it.
Yeah. Great. Well, we have Elaine Thatcher with us. We are talking books. We're compiling a UPR community book list. I've written down all of Anne's books here. And we'll have Elaine's list, my list as well. And I hope books that you recommend, and we'll put that all together, put that up on our website later today. You can get your list to me right now at upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. And we'll have more following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking reading. We want to know what books you're reading or recommending right now. We're compiling a UPR community book list. We do this about quarterly, and we can help each other. You might be reading a book or recommending a book that I just haven't heard of, and give me hours of pleasure reading that book, or vice versa. So we have Elaine Thatcher with us, avid reader and UPR friend. We talked to Anne Holman earlier in the program. We'd love to hear from you. You can get your book list to us right now to upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. What are you reading? Just a couple more things, Elaine, from this Atlantic article before we get to your list. I'll just read some more from the article. Again, the title, the headline of the article is The End of Reading. And Anne Holman got a pushback, very hopeful. Of course, she is, you know, she's around readers, which is great. And I think our audience probably skews more toward readers. But
yes.
The article says gambling has become a more common leisure activity than reading a book. Last year, 57% of Americans placed a bet, and previously in the article they said 38% of Americans had read a novel or a short story. The decline in reading cuts across age groups, gender, and education levels. Even the demographics that traditionally read the most, retirees, women, and college graduates, have seen a collapse. You were saying, Elaine, that you... reading more magazine articles.
I'm reading a lot of of shorter, but the things I choose tend to be longer articles.
Oh, okay.
And things that really make you think. So I hopefully am not. Yes, I scroll too. We all scroll, mm-hmm. I think. But I really do appreciate. I enjoy Substack. It's like reading a magazine with interesting articles.
Yeah.
And, but those other, I mean, The Atlantic is fabulous, and you know. So yeah. But I do think people, I see in some other publications I've seen that they are trending towards shorter articles.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Some of us are readers and some of us are less so, but it's not a bad thing that people have other interests, hopefully not gambling, but,
yeah, right.
but they have other skills as well.
Yeah, so, yeah, for sure, for sure. I will also say I reading some magazines I learn about books. They'll have, you know, a long article and then I'll learn, well, that's an excerpt from the forthcoming book, etc.
Yes.
Yeah. And then for me the extra step, well, let's go get that author and interview them, right? But
which is nice, yeah.
Which is nice. So anyway, let's jump into your list. Elaine, what are you reading?
Well, okay, so I have fallen in love with an author, and I'm just feeling like I want to read everything he's written. His name is John Crowley. I've never encountered his work before. And it seems like he does, he's not a one-trick pony. He does all kinds of genres. The first book of his I read was Lord Byron's novel, The Evening Land. It's a novel within a novel.
Yeah.
It posits that Lord Byron wrote a novel, which nobody thinks he did, you know. But and it, the story, it, you read Lord Byron's novel, which is sort of autobiographical, you know, somewhat. But then it also has the other story, which is the people who discover this novel. And that story is told in emails and letters, you know, that kind of discussion. Whereas I'm amazed at how well he captured 19th century writing style with this supposed novel. It's a very interesting book. I just enjoyed it. It's good escapism, and and I learned some things about Lord Byron. One of the people that is involved in, well, she's long gone, but she was his daughter, who, you know, was supposedly the keeper of this novel. Anyway, it's a great story. My current one of his that I'm reading is called Ka, K-A. Dar Oakley in the Ruin of Emer. You're going to have a hard time typing that in.
Yeah.
So K-A is the title. Ka, which is what crows say, and it's about a crow. Dar Oakley is the crow's name, and he has lived an extraordinarily long life, and he kind of created the first interactions between crows and people back in the eons past. Beautifully written, just such lovely prose, and very creative, and you know, a different approach. I used to be quite a fantasy lover, but I just got really tired of knights and dragons and
you know,
bloodbaths and stuff. And this is fantasy, but it's a totally different thing. It's gentle. It's a sweet story about Dar Oakley and his interactions with people. So I love it very much. So I'll be reading more of his.
Yeah, John Crowley.
Yes.
And you can get around these titles by just Googling John Crowley, and then he'll list his.
Yes.
Which I had to do for this. God, Dar Oakley and the Ruin of
Emer.
Emer,
I think. Yeah.
Which is YMR. So.
Yes, YMR is Emer, okay. Yeah. So I assume that's how it's pronounced. I don't know.
Right.
So, yeah. So that's an author that I had not read before that I am quite taken with. So then I think last time I mentioned that I think I was still reading it at the time of the last program. I was reading The Most Reluctant Convert, C.S. Lewis's Journey to Faith by David Downing. And I finished that book. It's a small book, but it very nicely summarizes how C.S. Lewis's thought processes were as he went through his transition from atheist to Christian. So I really enjoyed that. And another sort of philosophical slash religious type book that I read that I've been meaning to read for decades, and I finally did, was Man's Search for Meaning.
Oh, yeah.
By Viktor Frankl.
Right. How was that?
You know, it's very good. I was a little surprised by it because it has a more clinical sound to, you know, tone to it, because he, as a psychiatrist, was actually trying to clinically describe how people survive difficult things. And so there's some jargon, some psychiatric theorizing. But honestly, the thing that most people react to and that most people remember from that book is his his own story as a prisoner of war in Auschwitz and other Nazi camps, and B, his ideas about what gives a life meaning and why that works, to why the people who give up and die versus those who somehow have something to live for, whether it's a loved one back home or a purpose. You know, it's a really thought-provoking book. It's another short book, but I'm glad I read it finally.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one I don't know if I've ever read the whole thing. I know I've read parts
mm-hmm.
of it.
Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, it's constantly quoted. And I just thought it was time I read it.
Right. Yeah. Good. Well, I'm glad you did. Yeah. I'll have to pick that one up as well. Yeah. That's wonderful. Well, let me mention a couple. Let's see. Well, let's go to a break, and then I'll mention a couple, and you can finish out your list as well. We're compiling a UPR community book list and making suggestions for each other. A lot of us are avid readers, bucking this trend that we have been mentioning from this Atlantic article, The End of Reading. I think probably our audience is not in that demographic that's moved on to other things beyond reading. If you find fulfillment in reading, we'd love to hear what you are reading. upraccess@gmail.com is the way to get that to me. upraccess@gmail.com. We'll take a brief break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking about reading, and we're compiling a UPR community book list. The books mentioned in this program will be up on our website later today. And I might give you some ideas of some authors you hadn't heard of, or some books you'd like to read. We'd love you to return the favor and give us your book list, one book or many that you would recommend. Get that list to me at upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. And here is a recommendation from Dee, who emails us at upraccess@gmail.com. Constellations by Nick Payne, a play told through multiple timelines about grief, love, and time. So Constellations by Nick Payne. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah. So thanks, Dee. Appreciate that. We'll check that out and appreciate that recommendation. Constellations by Nick Payne, a play told through multiple timelines about grief, love, and time. Get your list, one or many books, to us at upraccess@gmail.com, upraccess@gmail.com. Well, in a couple books here that I might recommend, these are rereads. Go back to these every once in a while. Every once in a great while, I go back to Jane Austen and read the whole genre, with the exception of Mansfield Park, which I can't stand. But give me an email and rebut me here. Maybe it's your favorite, Jane Austen. Anyway, I'm reading Persuasion. It's her last novel. It's a bit more melancholy, although it's got some humor. It's got her usual hypochondriacs. Mm-hmm. Her sister Mary, in this case.
Yes.
It's got her usual awful fathers, and in this case, Sir Walter, I think, is maybe the worst father. makes me wonder about Jane's father, although I think he was fine in her case. He's completely vain. He has so many mirrors in his chambers and comments on the appearances of everybody. That's how he judges people,
yes.
Right? But Anne is wise and quiet. And 8 years ago, when she was 19, she's, on advice of Lady Russell, her friend, spurned Captain Wentworth. then he reappears. And
yep.
So there's much talk early in the book of she's lost her bloom. In the later
she's 27 years old.
27 years old. Now she regains her bloom. Anyway, and then Captain Wentworth comes to reappreciate her. Anyway. I won't spoil it, but on every page, you know, everybody knows the plot because you've probably seen the movies or the miniseries, but on every page with Jane Austen, she never disappoints. You get a turn of phrase. You get a very wise insight into life.
A little humor. That's how I feel about Dickens, too. I feel like, you know, if you've only seen the television versions of his stories, oh, my gosh, his humor comes through even more when in the writing.
Yeah. Let's see if I can find. Why don't you give us your next one? I think I've closed the tab where I had my next recommendation here.
I read a book called Stone Arabia by Dana Spiotta, or Spiotta, I don't know. Anyway, Stone Arabia, I think, is a town in like upstate New York or something. But it's. It's a bit player in the actual plot, but it's a story of two siblings in California, Southern California, and the sister is Denise. She's basically sort of the responsible one, but has some issues. The brother is Nick, and he's kind of the focus. It's his story that is the focus of the story, and he started out as a very charismatic young man, but he was in rock bands and so forth. So there's a lot of rock and roll references and stuff in there. But he retreats into himself, and lives alone in a strange house. And he writes music. He records music himself. All you know how you can do. For those that don't know, with audio recording, you can pile yourself on top of yourself. You know, you can create many tracks and create the sound of a band by yourself. But he documents his whole process in a completely fictitious journal. I mean, he talks about his critics and his fans, none of whom exist, because his music is only in his head and in his own life.
Mm.
And then the relationship between the two, because the sister becomes worried about him. And it's an interesting story. I wouldn't say it was my favorite, because I had a hard time relating to the characters a little bit, but it's a very interesting exploration of sibling love and what happens, you know, this what can happen to a person who chooses not to interact with the world anymore.
Well, that sounds very interesting. Stone Arabia.
Stone Arabia.
By Dana Spiotta, or however you say that name.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Yeah, thanks for that recommendation. I'll just mention this. I'm rereading this. Read it a while back, and coming back to it, this is history. So The Impending Crisis, America Before the Civil War. By David Potter. Just a wonderful, wonderful book. Gives you, if you're interested in the Civil War and that era, this is the 1848 to 1861. This is how America got there, starting with the Mexican War and going forward to the election of 1860. And then
might even be relevant to today. Huh?
Could be relevant to today. Yeah. That's right, yeah. I think it was much recommended and read early about, you know, a few years ago, still relevant today, and it's called The Impending Crisis by David Potter. Highly recommend it.
That sounds
enjoying
good.
It once again. Maybe one more, Elaine?
Well, this is kind of a from left field one. I you know, the whole GLP-1
yeah
thing. I'm reading a book, or I read a book called Weightless, A Doctor's Guide to GLP-1 Medication. And the doctor is Rocio Salas Whalen, R-O-C-I-O-S-A-L-A-S hyphen Whalen. She's definitely an advocate for GLP-1 medications. But she offers a lot of, if anybody out there, and I'm sure like half the population is, considering these medications, it's probably a good thing to read, because she gives you the mechanism by which they work, suggested protocols, and anyway, so that's kind of a different book, but one that I have recently read.
Okay. Weightless, A Doctor's Guide to GLP-1 Medications, Rocio Salas Whalen.
Yep.
All right. Very good. Well, we're out of time, but this will be up at our website later today, and still get us your recommendations if you haven't to upraccess@gmail.com. We'll add those on to our UPR community book list. Elaine, also always a pleasure. Thank you.
It's always fun.
And happy reading, everybody, and thanks for listening to Access Utah.